Good morning, members of the public and Lahontan staff. Welcome to the regular meeting of the California Regional Water Quality Control Board, Lahontan Region. My name is Kimberly Cox from Hellendale, and I am the chair. I want to thank the public for attending this morning. Your comments, ideas, and participation are vital to the decision-making process. We do a better job when you give us your input. At this time, I'd like to introduce the members of the regional board. To my left is Mr. Keith Dias from Rosemont. And to my far right, Mr. Don Jardine from Markleyville. And Mr. Eric Sandell from Truckee. Unfortunately, Mr. Pumphrey and Dr. Horn were unable to be with us for this meeting. Our executive officer is Patty Kumyanjan. Ms. Kumyanjan, would you please introduce the staff?
Sure. We have to my left Kim Niemeyer, our legal counsel, and Sue Genera. And you give the orange cards to who have if you'd like to speak. In the audience, I have Lori Kemper as an assistant executive officer, Mike Plaziak, our Victorville office division manager. I have Richard Booth, and Mr. Robert Larson. I have Patrice Copeland from our Victorville office. I have Scott Ferguson from our Tahoe office, and a guest from the State Board, Andrew DeMuccia.
Oh, very nice. Thank you. And I see we do have one orange card already. So that we can have an accurate administrative record, I ask that you speak clearly because our mic is not working today. Using the orange cards, your name will be called at the appropriate time and you can come to the lectern. If you do not agree with an action or an inaction of the regional board, you may petition the State Water Board to review our decision. I want to make sure you are aware of your due process rights. The State Board must receive the petition within 30 days of the Regional Board's actions. Our staff can provide you with technical assistance to file your petition. Information about the petition process is also available on the State Water Resources Control Board. For logistics this morning, I have a request to move item 11 up to the top of our agenda this morning, so in front of item 9. Item 11 is the resolution approving renewal of an energy conditional waiver of statutory requirements to file a report of waste discharge and to adopt waste discharge requirements for management and disposal of solid waste from wildfires. Ms. Kumyanjan?
I would like to invite Patrice Copeland to the lectern to give a presentation.
Good morning, Madam Chair and board members. My name is Patrice Copeland, and I am a senior engineering geologist in your Victorville branch office. I'm here to discuss the proposed resolution to approve the renewal of an emergency conditional waiver of statutory requirements to file a report of waste discharge and to adopt waste discharge requirements for management and disposal of solid waste from wildfires, as you've already heard. Here's an outline of this morning's presentation. We will discuss the recent round fire in Mono County, what we've learned from an assessment that was conducted after the 2007 fires in San Bernardino and San Diego counties, the regulations applicable to the discharge of waste, the requirements of the conditional waiver, future issues to consider, the comments we've received on the item, and staff recommendations. The round fire occurred. Wait, I'm too far. There we go. The round fire occurred in Mono County, west of Highway 395, in the Squall Meadows Paradise area. The fire began on February 6th of this year and burned about 7,000 acres. 40 residences and outbuildings were burned, and 5 residences were damaged. We know that many hazardous substances may be found in burned residential areas, including asbestos from building materials, metal residue from batteries, treated wood, and melted plumbing, pesticides and herbicides from lawn and garden products, polycyclic aromatic hydrocarbons, or PAHs, including dioxins and furans from burned tires and plastics, and polychlorinated biphenyls, or PCBs, from appliances and automotive parts. Soil beneath these burned homes may also contain concentrations of these same wastes. Here's my map. This is a map of California and Nevada with our region outlined in blue. The round fire is indicated by the red star right here. The little green dots are the unlined landfills that are located closest to the fire area. Also shown on the map are our five lined landfills in our region that are authorized by the waiver to take debris and ash. So those are all down here. And the labels correspond to the name of the landfill. In addition, the lined Lockwood landfill, located near Reno Sparks, Nevada, that's up here, may also take such debris. Please note that all of the landfills authorized to take such waste in our region are located in the southern portion of Lahontan. We currently have no lined Class 3 landfills in the central or northern portions of our region. So the closest lined landfills permitted to accept this debris to the fire are Lancaster Landfill, which is number one, and Lockwood in Nevada, both of which are about 200 miles from the fire area. Turning now to the 2007 Southern California wildfires and what we know about them. The Department of Toxic Substance Control, or DTSC, conducted an assessment of burned residential areas associated with the Slide Fire in San Bernardino County and the Witch Creek Fire in San Diego County that occurred in October of 2007. The objective of the assessment was to perform a representative characterization of the residual burn debris and ash in residential areas in order to assess the presence of hazardous constituents at concentrations exceeding statutorily established human health-based criteria or other criteria. The purpose was not to characterize the ash as hazardous waste. These fires burned over 350,000 acres, so they were much, much larger than the round fire, and destroyed more than 2,200 structures and more than 2,000 vehicles. We know that many hazardous substances may be found in burned residential areas, including those I mentioned earlier, asbestos, heavy metals, pesticides and herbicides, PAHs, and including the dioxins and furans, and the PCBs. This slide shows on the right the concentrations of the metals that from the samples of the burned debris from these fires. This is the average concentration that they determined. And it's a combination of both the fire from San Diego and the fire from San Bernardino. The information to the right on the column there is the levels established that if they exceed these levels, then you're probably looking at things that have the character of being toxic. So, the data that DTSC collected shows that the burned ash debris contained concentrations of cadmium, copper, lead, and zinc that exceeded the California toxic levels, which were also waste characterization screening criteria and are considered important benchmarks for evaluating threat to water quality. The values presented here include a range of means or average concentrations of these elements from both fires and compare them to the Title 22 screening criteria for the total threshold limit concentration, or TTLC, and the soluble threshold limit concentration, or STLC. The TTLC and STLC values help us understand the character of the waste. Therefore, these wastes that exceeded these levels present a higher threat to water quality, and we believe such wastes should only go into lined landfills. The study also found that the mean concentrations of the metals antimony, arsenic, barium, chromium, nickel, and zinc exceeded the US EPA soil screening levels for surface water, shallow groundwater, and areas underlain by fractured rock aquifer systems in both of these counties. The researchers conducted this assessment using a statistically based random sampling approach within typical burned residential areas as identified by county representatives. They avoided hot spots to ensure that representative samples were collected. Based on the data collected, this study concluded that an expedited removal of burn debris and ash from these wildfires was warranted and in the best interest of the public. Within the California Code of Regulations, hazardous waste characterization, handling, and disposal is governed by Title 22, which gives the criteria to determine if a waste should be handled and disposed as a hazardous waste. The Department of Toxic Substance Control, or DTSC, enforces the requirements of Title 22. Non-hazardous solid waste characterization, handling, and disposal is regulated under Title 27, which we use to ensure the protection of public health and safety, the environment, and water quality. Title 27 is also used by our sister agency, CalRecycle. The California Water Code, Section 13172, provides us with the authority to ensure that wastes are classified by their threat to water quality and then disposed appropriately to ensure the protection of water quality. These are the factors that we address in our waste discharge requirements. But we are bringing to you today a conditional waiver for disposal of waste associated with fires during a governor-declared state of emergency. This resolution is important because it gives us the ability to waive waste discharge requirements for the expeditious management and disposal of solid waste that result from the cleanup of burned areas, provided that certain conditions are met as specified in the waiver. In addition, it enables us to allocate staff resources more effectively. As stated earlier, the waiver applies only to cleanup of burned areas that the governor has declared is a state of emergency. The waiver allows the discharge of waste only to lined Class 3 landfills listed here within the Lahontan region. In addition, it allows debris to be temporarily staged in areas either at a landfill or other area, provided conditions are met, such as the area is lined with a heavy gauge plastic, the area is not located within 100 feet of a surface water, and ponding, infiltration, and inundation are limited to the best and best management practices for stormwater controls are used effectively. The waiver provides a streamlined approach to cleanup of debris after fires, but also provides that these cleanup activities are conducted in an environmentally safe way. The conditions that the discharger must meet in order to be in compliance with the waiver. If approved as proposed, the waiver will expire on March 12th of the year 2020. At the direction of our executive officer, staff are raising some very important issues for your consideration for future revisions of the waiver. One such issue concerns adopting a revised waiver that will allow for the handling and disposal of wildfire from areas where a governor has not seen fit to declare a state of emergency. In addition, a revised waiver may also cover other emergency conditions that may arise from other natural and man-made disasters, such as storms, mudslides, earthquakes, or mass mortality waste from animal or fish die-offs. But wait, there's more. In addition, we are asking, should a revised waiver consider the efficacy or effectiveness of requiring such emergency-related debris to be hauled sometimes hundreds of miles away to an appropriate line Class 3 landfill? In order to answer this question, we need to understand the character of the waste and determine if such waste is hazardous, designated, non-hazardous, or inert. And we must comply with the requirements of California Code of Regulations, Title 27, that governs the disposal of solid waste. At your direction, we would also like to engage the counties and other agencies that we are already working cooperatively with to explore the possibility of perhaps lining portions of existing landfills that are located in the central and northern portions of the region in accordance with the California Code of Regulations, Title 27, to facilitate the less costly disposal of waste from emergencies such as the recent wildfires in our more rural areas, and yet still be protective of water quality and the designated beneficial uses of the waters of the state in the Lahontan region. In conclusion, for waste generated during wildfire events that the governor has declared a state of emergency exists, it is appropriate to dispose of these wastes in line Class 3 landfills, provided the conditions of our waiver have been met. In addition, staff have reviewed a number of other regional board waivers and found that all of them require disposal of such waste only to line Class 3 landfills. Our conditional waiver as proposed is protective of water quality and consistent with the practices of other regional boards. We did receive comments on the item from the Mono County Board of Supervisors. I'd like to address their concerns one by one. The board perceives that there may have been a difference of opinion between the Water Board and that of our sister agencies, CalRecycle and DTSC, regarding how waste from the Round Fire may be disposed, handled, and characterized. Although each agency's mission is slightly different, we all have the same goal: protection of public health and safety and the environment. DTSC works to help identify and remove any recognizable household hazardous waste and asbestos. The CalRecycle team comes in and helps characterize the waste and organizes temporary waste storage areas and the removal efforts. The Water Board's role here is to ensure the protection of water quality as it relates to the characterization, handling, and disposal of the waste. We are all working cooperatively together. The second concern requested clarification of the use of the term normal fires as proposed in the waiver. Suffice it to say, a normal fire is anything other than a governor-declared emergency. The third concern points out that transportation of the waste to line landfills may necessitate hauling the waste for hundreds of miles, which may have other environmental impacts as well as severe financial hardship for the rural counties. We acknowledge that transporting such waste far distances may in fact impact other aspects of the environment, such as greenhouse gases and carbon emissions, but these are short-term impacts. We also agree that transportation and disposal costs will likely be high. However, we are in the process of coordinating a plan to sample soil waste beneath the burn site in order to reduce the amount of waste that must be taken to a lined landfill. This is for the Round Fire. Nonetheless, the California Water Code requires that we ensure water quality is protected. We believe the conditional waiver is protective of water quality. The Board of Supervisors' final concern is a request that standards for constructing emergency cells at lined landfills be developed to be used as a contingency measures during such disasters. In addition, the Board of Supervisors acknowledges that such cells cannot be engineered and developed during emergency responses and cleanups. As such, Water Board staff are open to beginning a dialogue with the rural counties to engineer a solution that would be protective of water quality. In light of the recent Round Fire in Mono County, the need for this waiver is critical. Staff recommend that at this time you either adopt a resolution as proposed or you could consider broadening it to include other emergencies. In addition, we would like your direction on the future issues that we did raise during this discussion. And at this time, I thank you, and we'll take any questions.
Are there any questions for staff? Mr. Sandel?
I generally agreement with pretty much everything you presented, including what the Board of Supervisors had to say. But the one thing that I didn't get out of your presentation, I probably just missed it, is how would this degree be handled without the governor's declaration?
The waiver only covers the event that where the governor declared an emergency.
If he had not declared an emergency, what would happen to that debris?
Then the debris would be taken to the regular Class 3 landfills.
Which is what's going to happen anyway.
But the landfills under permit have to have a load checking program. So any waste that comes in would be checked.
Right.
And if the landfill operator determined that the waste was unacceptable for that landfill, they would turn it away.
But given the analysis that you presented, would any of that waste have been unacceptable?
For those 2007 fires, yes. Based on what that was.
So they're lined landfills, but they're not hazardous waste.
Correct.
That's only Lockwood in this area is rated that way.
Correct.
Okay, that was the one point you didn't make. Okay, thank you.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, I just want to say that Mike Plaziak, Supervisor Engineering Geologist, one of the other nuances to this waiver is the temporary storage of waste. Mm-hmm. So that's going to give them the ability.
Yes, for staging. Yeah,
exactly.
Yep.
But you wouldn't have a conventional non-hazard.
Seems like what we really need, along with all this, is some reliable way of sorting what's coming in, because so much of it is not hazardous and could be disposed ordinarily if you only just knew which part.
Well, as when the governor does declare an emergency, what they do is they come in, like the teams that I talked about from DTSC will come in and remove the obviously hazardous things, like, hey, that was a computer, that was a car, let's go put those in and get them recycled appropriately.
Yeah. Good.
Any questions?
Yes. Good presentation, Patrice.
Thank you.
To follow up on one of Mr. Sandel's questions, did you say that because the governor had declared an emergency, these lined Class 3 landfills were mandated to accept the waste?
I think they're appropriate to accept the waste, even if it wasn't declared an emergency.
They're not required then?
No.
It's
what's authorized by the waiver. We authorize it. You guys authorize it.
Where the importance of the governor declared state of emergency comes in is that it actually provides a statutory exemption from CEQA, so we're able to have this waiver without going through that CEQA process, and that's what most of the other regions have done, although I think CEQA was done for Region 5 where they actually expanded it to be beyond just governor declared state of emergencies, but having that limitation allows us to do this waiver without CEQA.
And so if in a non-emergency situation, these Class 3 landfills would not accept this particular waste?
If it were hazardous.
If it were characterized as being hazardous, they couldn't, because we don't allow hazardous to go into our Class 3.
Except in emergency.
Well, that's why, I think that's where the governor, in order to expeditiously clean up the debris, because the debris itself presents a risk to human health and public safety. And so they have allowed that we can get rid of it into the lined Class 3 landfills, because at least with a liner you have the protection. And you have a leachate collection system beneath the liner that if anything were to leak through leachate with bad stuff, hazardous or bad stuff, leachate, you could remove it before it goes down to groundwater. Because the objective with the liner is to prevent it from, to the maximum extent that we can, from getting into the groundwater. Because that's where it gets really harder to clean up, which is one of the reasons why we don't want to take it to the unlined landfills that are local.
Okay.
to the fire.
One more question, and it relates to your slide 4.
Is that the map?
Yes. You've shown us the locations of the lined Class 3 landfills in the state of California in our region. Are there any available in the region just to the west of us?
There are, but most of the waivers that are written for the other regions are region-specific. So, like, our waiver accepts waste from our region. And I suppose you could get an exemption and get it to a landfill to the west that was closer. And that would be up to coordination between the counties and the other regions, I imagine.
Maybe I could help you a little bit with that. You could take it to another region. It's up to the landfill operator if they want to accept the waste or not. So that's one caveat. And I think our next speaker will talk a little bit about, I believe Anderson is the closest one in Region 5, and that's probably cost prohibitive because you have to go over the mountain, and, you know.
Yes.
So we don't have a lot of choices, and that speaks to a bigger issue on it. The policy discussion is that many of the rural areas in the north coast up in the Seneca Valley in our region, you know, in the rural areas, we don't have a lot of lime because they're easily accessible. And with climate change, that's something we should discuss.
Thank you. No more questions.
So looking back at some of the issues outlined in the staff report, item one is, should the waiver allow for the handling and disposal of wildfire debris from areas that have not been declared under a state of emergency by the governor? That one seems fairly intuitive.
If I could help that, yes, try clarity. That would probably be my line, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, but the following situations. The period between the fire and when the governor declares an emergency. When a county or a mayor declares an emergency. Those are the caveats I've seen most often. Did I miss any, Patrice?
I don't think so.
So that's what you're talking about. In some cases, in smaller situations, a county may declare emergency, but it not reach to the level of the governor declared emergency.
That seems to make sense. In a situation where, say, there's a neighborhood fire, one or two or three or four houses burn, what is the current process for disposal of that? And does the regional board get involved at that level? Or who comes in and manages
that? We rely on the landfill operator to perform the waste load checking program that is mandated under their permits.
So would that be through the LEA or?
Yes.
Okay, how consistent is that?
I haven't found any difference from region to region for how they implement that.
Well, it seems to make sense to me that the resolution be expanded to include those.
We actually couldn't in this waiver right here, though, because to do that would require CEQA, and we don't have a CEQA exemption for anything other than a governor declared state of emergency. Okay. So that would be definitely something that we would want to consider for the next waiver and do CEQA for that. And we have an example from Region 5 where they've done that, and I think that it's a great template that we would have to do some work up front for that.
If I could follow with a related comment, I have been in conversations with Region 5, who's also renewing their waiver and redoing their CEQA for these county, city declared emergencies. And they and we talked about collaborating to use their CEQA document so that potentially at a later date we could expand those.
Are they going to expand into other things like landslides and that sort of disposal as well?
I think some of their. Doesn't Kim, their waiver?
Yeah, their waiver covers.
Has that. But I'm not sure what else they're expanding, that they are seeking to do CEQA. I didn't talk to them long enough to find out what else they're. They must be trying to do other things in renewing their CEQA.
Well, then the second question we have from staff is, should the waiver also address handling and disposal of waste and debris from natural and man-made disasters other than wildfires? Is there any thoughts?
I think we should definitely consider it in the next waiver, but not in the current waiver.
Well, it sounds like we can't put it in this in the current waiver because of the CEQA.
Well, I think that you could. I mean, I don't think that it's that much of a stretch from what we have now. I mean, what's at issue is the waste as opposed to where it comes from. So if we wanted to, in this waiver, expand it to cover waste other than from wildfires, I don't think that would be too much of a stretch.
But since we're going to be doing, in essence, a second edition of this, maybe instead of rushing to get the change in what we currently have on the table, perhaps we should just wait, unless there's some need for expanding it now. Seems like we should just go ahead on the track that we're on, and then in the next version with the CEQA, we go ahead and enlarge the scope of it.
But the board does have the option, because expanding it, we don't need CEQA to other governor's emergencies. It's just the county and city emergency, so the board could, in theory, expand the waiver to other causes of waste from an emergency, because a lot of the handling procedures in the existing waiver, mm-hmm. by Lakes Fires today, would stay the same.
Mm-hmm. So I think of the flooding, the landslides, earthquakes, you're going to have a lot of the similar type of debris from that. So, you know, if it helps, again, are we still limited to the governor declared emergencies? Or
yes, yeah. So okay, it'd be
so
governor.
We can't change that aspect, but we can make it more broad to accept any, you know, a generic emergency.
Like disaster.
A disaster. I think that's a... seem like a reasonable change that we do have the ability to make if the board is so inclined. And as far as item 3 and 4, those seem like ongoing collaborative efforts from staff that really seem to make sense in that respect. So I would encourage staff to move ahead on that, but I think if we have the ability on item 2 to make it a more homogenous type disaster related item, okay. We should.
In that case, I'm going to make a motion to adopt the resolution with the addition of item 2, handling and disposal of waste and debris from natural and man-made disasters other than wildfires.
Including wildfires?
In addition to wildfires.
Something like that? Mm-hmm.
Why was item 2 worded other than wildfires?
Oh, I don't know.
That was probably just how it was presented in the Monroe County.
Because the resolution addresses specifically wildfires.
Okay, including wildfires. Disregard the language in our community.
We do have a speaker on that, right? I like to have a nice motion and a second, but I'd like to call up Todd Talhammer to speak on this item. Thank you, Patrice.
Good morning, Madam Chair, board members, executive officers, members of the committee. My name is Todd Talhammer. I'm the operations chief for Cal Recycle. Unfortunately, I've been given the title of debris expert on these types of wildfires. It's my honor to speak here. Some of you may or may not know, but I was a project engineer that designed what we call the Angora protocols that was used on the 2007 fire, which has basically started Cal Recycle's environmental cleanup program in the wildfire debris area. In creating that program here in Tahoe, we actually created something different than it had ever been done before. We actually put a standard on the residential lots. A little background about myself, I'm an environmental engineer, but I'm also a firefighter. I've been a firefighter for almost 20 years, and I've gone to a number of these disasters as a fireman, and I've got to go back to these areas and actually clean these residential lots up. A lot of what I do is put resources on the ground, and these resources are based very similar to fire resources, where we have staging areas and we bring equipment in. Cal Recycle is the agency that's been tasked by the governor's office in the Round Fire to remove the material in a coordinated manner such that it gets cleaned up quickly, efficiently, effectively, and protective in the environment. With that, there have been a number of questions. If you wanted to ask, I can address those as far as what happens if there is no governor's order, what happens to those three or four homes that burned down. Those are all things I'm very familiar with. I fully support this resolution. I'm very proud to be part of a project in this district, in this area that we've started in a cleanup process. However, there are some logistical issues that are now starting. You're starting to see from a logistical standpoint, from an operational standpoint, is that Round Fire is a relatively easy fire to deal with. There's only 45 structures. Currently we have 15 homeowners signed up in our program. However, as you know, in the Tahoe Fire was 256 structures. And in San Diego fires, in total, it was 4,000 structures. And if you recall, back in Berkeley, in the Oakland Hills fire, part of my crew was actually on that fire. We were the guys that were kicking down the doors and evacuating people in the Oakland fire. But that was 10,000 homes. So the magnitude of what we're dealing with here varies. And it varies in such a manner that the question was asked, what happens if there is no state declared emergency? In Oakland, for instance, that was 10,000 individual contracts that cleaned up 10,000 individual homes. There was no coordinated debris effort. A lot of trucks went in a lot of different directions. You also have the issue of, can you take that amount of waste into one landfill or one landfill? So we're looking at the big global picture. My colleague behind me from OES, Sean Smith, is here. They deal with this and the coordinated debris issues. We're talking earthquakes. We're talking major events. This will change this resolution when you have, say, for instance, an entire town that gets destroyed by a fire, big magnitudes of fire. And the reason I say this is in Weed, I just finished with Weed. Again, thank you for taking this item out of order. My crew, my team's a little tired. We finished the Weed project, and that was 140 homes, which also included a library, two churches, and a community center, and it burned right next to an elementary school. So there was a heightened environmental awareness there. Unfortunately, in Weed, we came up with a lot of asbestos. We came up with record levels of asbestos. We came up with asbestos to the point where, based upon my sampling and what had occurred, is that that exposure to that community was unacceptable. So we needed to do a better and a quicker job in order to get this material off the ground for the asbestos. We're just now beginning the Round Fire assessment. We'll look at the asbestos issue as far as that is concerned. DTSC's gone after the gross asbestos, but we're looking at the sheetrock, the popcorn ceiling that ends up in the ash. There's a lot of complicated little scenarios in this ash material. One is that it's exempt from the NESHAP requirement because it's a residential home. But just because it's exempt from a NESHAP requirement doesn't mean it's exempt from an OSHA requirement. So my workers will be in hazardous material clothing and protective respiratory gear. That also is communicated to the landfill. When that ash material comes to the landfill, that it may contain asbestos, so they need to handle that differently. With all this said, it's a very complex issue. Like again, I'd like to thank the Water Board and the regions for doing this and putting them in line facilities, because obviously the data supports that the material is and is approaching hazardous level constituents. The statistical analysis has said that it's not, but there are a number of heavy metal constituents that you would not want in an unlined facility with shallow groundwater, as in that we have here. Benton Crossing has a shallow groundwater. With that said, and looking at this and trying to not take too much of your time, we're looking at trying to do an expedited removal in the Round Fire. Currently, as it stands, it's a 3.5-hour truck trip one way and 3.5 hours back. That doesn't include the load time and the unloading time, depending upon how busy the landfill is. I'm anticipating one load per truck per day. And in doing so, our cleanup program does something a little bit unique versus other cleanup programs or other contractors. We clean it up to an actual recognized standard. And the standard that we're using is a standard that is developed by DTSC and USEPA, and it's called CHISLS. It's an environmental health risk-based analysis. In doing that, we take a lot of soil that's underneath the ash. And part of my proposal that I made to Patty and the executive team was that what we're looking at is taking the ash and debris to the line facility. And we'd like a waiver so that we could take the soil, the residual soil underneath the ash, to the Bishop Sunland landfill, which is a Class 3 facility, in order to expedite this process. Somebody had mentioned that how do we segregate the materials and where does that material go and how do we get this process quicker. One of the ways that we can get the process quicker is that we can take the ash and the debris, put it in a lime truck with a cover, send it to Lancaster, and at that point take the residual soils, which is underneath the ash, and send those to Bishop Sundlin and dispose of the material there, and that will save the truck trips. And Bishop Sundlin, we're looking at an hour round trip versus a 7 hour round trip. So you'll see that the process will go quicker and the residuals will come off the ground even sooner. With that said, this is kind of unusual. Nobody's actually looked at what the residual soil is underneath the ash. And yesterday we took 15 samples, and we're going to submit those to the water board here just so we can look at those issues and see where those numbers are and feel that, you know, that material is safe to go to an unlined Class 3 facility. And to answer one of the questions of what happens to the material if it is not a state-declared emergency, it can go to Bishop, Benton, or Pumas Valley. There is no requirement to go to a lined facility if there is no state-declared emergency. That's what's going to happen, and that's what has happened in a number of fires. Santa Cruz would be one that was no state-declared emergency. There's a number of fires in the past couple of years that the governor's office has not declared it an emergency and required Cali Recycle to assist in the removal of the debris. So that material does, ash and debris, goes to an unlined facility.
But that means that potentially hazardous materials are going to unlined facilities, but not a large quantity.
Yes, sir. Well, in the Santa Cruz fire, there was 125 homes that were burned.
Well, that's significant.
That's a significant amount of quantity that goes. And so that goes to an unlined facility. But then the question that you have to ask is that if it has, it contains an exceptional amount of asbestos, you want to get it off the ground as quick as possible as you can and secure it into a landfill. There's a big balancing act, and I'm more than willing to work with your staff. We go way back, some of us, to the 2007 fire. You have excellent staff here. Again, they helped me put together what we call the Angora protocols, which is what we're using in the round fire. So this entire cleanup process started in your region. For us, there was a question asked earlier. All the material from the Tahoe fire went to Nevada, went to both Lockwood and an unlined facility, because it is acceptable over there. And so at our maximum daily throughput in Tahoe, we were removing 150 truckloads a day. We pretty much exceeded the road capacity in Tahoe with 150 truckloads a day on the roads. We could not have gone any quicker. But with that said, it was 256 structures, and we removed them in 38 days. So we took the environmental concerns of the community, and we got them in the trucks and then. But with that said, I would like permission to maybe look at this proposed exemption so that we can take the residual materials to Bishop Sundlin, which is downhill from the incident, versus taking all that soil residual. Because the one thing that's different from Cal Recycle than any other cleanup is that we tend to take the residual soils down to basically background. And that's so that the person who rebuilds that house or sells that lot will get a certification from Cal Recycle saying that lot has met a cleanup goal. No one else does that. And I'm proud to say that that particular protocol was developed here in the region.
Is there any change needed in what we have on the table in front of us to accommodate what you're saying about taking the residual soils to an unlined landfill? Or are we already covered what we have in front of us today?
I would defer to your executive team. I would say that the ash and debris is fairly clarified, and I think there's really no, I think that could be delegated to your authority. And the ash and soil is residual. That's kind of one of those technical things that I think your executive team, I think your order covers ash and debris, and I think that's what it should, but it does not cover that residual soil issue. And there's a number of other small technical issues as far as when you start erosion control, you know, when you can accept those. I think those things can be worked out amongst your staff. I just wanted to make you aware of that. What we try to do is look at these things as a coordinated debris and get it off the ground as quick as we can, but in doing so, sometimes we're faced with the issue we have here. And a good example is that we could not dispose of the material in that region. We had to go outside the region, and we went to Anderson Landfill. Mm-hmm. It's the only lined landfill in Northern California. That's going to cause issues, for instance, if there's a large fire in Eureka, or if there's a large fire in Modoc County. You're talking significant distance travel in order for disposal. And those are things that I think your future resolutions may want to look at as far as what that mechanical, logistical requirements are in order to put it in a truck and dispose of it appropriately. I'm fully supportive of the landfill cells. I don't think this material should go to, say, for instance, Bishop Sumlin. There is going to be circumstances where I think you might want to dispose of it quicker than you would for environmental and community protection. It makes it a tough decision. I thank you for your time. Is there any questions?
There was a question about closer landfills. The executive officer mentioned there is some to the west, but you have to go through the mountains to get there. Are there any other options in this case? Because that's quite a length of travel.
You guys are in a geographical bottom hole. Unfortunately, as an operations chief, as an engineer, as a firefighter that deals with the logistics, there's no good answer. And in other words, to take it up and over Highway 50 or to take it up and over some of the mountain passes, we're talking very long trucks. Unfortunately, when I did a project up in Eureka and off the Hoopa Reservation, we were cleaning up burned homes up there from a wildfire, but one of the trucks tipped over, and it tipped over into a creek. So you start playing with those logistical issues, and there's really no simple answer to this. There is a landfill in Nevada that's online that is closer, but we want to work with the spirit of the intent, and I prefer not to go to an online landfill in Nevada. It is closer, but I would rather ship the ash and debris to a lined facility and take the residual soils. And just to give you an example, we're looking at one to two loads of ash and debris, 1.5 loads to one load of metal, 1 to 2 loads of concrete, and anywhere between 3 and 6 loads of residual. So you can see the majority of what we need to ship is the residual soil. The ash per home is 1 to 2 loads, and as an engineer, as a firefighter, that's logistically possible. I can do it. Now, if you gave me 4,000 homes, I'm not sure if I could do it. So there's a certain scale of reasonable time lane and trucking is that when you get to the 10,000 home level, you get to the 4,000 home level, I'm not sure there's enough trucks in the United States in order to meet this mandate to get it to a lined facility. So there's a scale of disaster, if that makes sense. If the earthquake is large enough, you know, you can do a number of you can do a number of staging areas, a number of get that material staged, and you can process that material quickly. Then the question comes down to is that staging of that material, does it contain a significant amount of asbestos as well? So you're double handling it. There's all the number of logistical issues. I come from the field. I wear a lot of boots in the field. I live in my pickup truck for the state. But with that said, these are all issues that I think you need to look at when it talks about the magnitude of the disaster as well.
Ms. Kunganja, do you have an answer?
Yeah, I do. Both under existing law, absent this waiver, and with this waiver, we do have the flexibility to deal with the waste based on the sampling we're going to get if it's not, you know, if it's relatively clean soil. It actually probably is a benefit to these two landfills as alternative to the cover. They could use it for that if they wanted to, which is also an issue that landfills are always looking for soil for alternative daily cover. Do you mind if I ask a question?
No, please.
Do you know if the landfills will waive the tipping fee under the governor's order, meaning it makes it a little bit easier for the transfer?
I know Benton Crossing would love to have the materials and alternative daily cover. There's been some issues with the owner of that facility, which is LA Power and Water. They've made a statement that they will not allow even the staging of that material. They don't want any of that material in their landfill. I would look at the water board once these soil results came back, and you guys would understand that, hey, this is relatively clean soil, and you could use it as alternative daily cover. That would have to be a communication between LA Power and the Water District and us. But I know also Bishop Sunderland would like to use it as alternative daily cover as well. That discussion, that is a beautiful example of what we tried to do in Weed. We wanted to use our residual soils at Anderson as an alternative daily cover. However, the question came back from that region was, well, how do you know the residual soils don't contain elevated concentrations of pesticides from residential uses of pesticides? How do you know those residual soils don't contain, you know, the heavy metals and other scenarios that we are finding? Because we didn't sample those residual soils. And that was a good, that's a good question. So at that point, we were happy to pay it as a disposable item and not answer those questions because of the emergency. Unfortunately, a lot of these questions come up, and I'm trying to deal with how do I get asbestos and ash off the ground versus can this material be used as an alternative daily cover. Mm-hmm. I fully support that, and I think it's actually a beneficial use to take some of this residual soil and cover trash. I think it's an excellent idea, but then the question comes down amongst the region is, you know, as we all know, that there are some residual pesticides that we use that were now banned that people sprayed around their homes, and I'm digging that soil up. So the question is, should I take a wide swath of pesticide sampling, and should I ask that question, and should we see where that question resolves? So I prefer to use an alternative daily cover, and I think it's an excellent use, and I think it's an excellent scenario where it is under the governor's emergency order, and you have that authority to say, look, it's under an emergency, let's be protective of the community and health, and let's get this material out here as quick as we possibly can. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Any, sure.
No other questions. Thank you very much, Todd. I appreciate your time. I know staff has taken kind of a crack at making this resolution a little broader in its application. Do you want to?
Yes. Theme of always be prepared. Staff and worked on an option two for your consideration, and that would be to expand the waiver from wildfires to emergencies and disasters, because a lot of the other pieces of the waiver would stay unchanged, which is how you handle it. And so I have copies to hand up for your consideration. If the board wishes to go in that direction, so I'll soon hand that out and have some available to the public. And as you will see, the changes are rather surgical. It just strikes out wildfire and inserts disaster in many places. But the bulk of the waiver you will see is pretty much the same. It'll strike out fire and hand the word debris and just leave debris. In the opening statement on the first page, it will clarify that it's disasters such as fires, floods, earthquakes, and storms. So for this change, we would not need to redo CEQA. It would allow you or the board to consider other emergencies within this 5-year span, this waiver, to fall into this waiver.
Amend your motion.
Does my motion not include natural disasters?
The most recent one did, yes. But I thought you would like to actually see what you are discussing.
Yeah. This is what I envisioned.
Yeah. I just think this is why I want to make sure you feel comfortable about what it actually would look like.
Yeah.
What section would cover the option of taking the soil from the burned houses?
I was flipping through, you're trying to find this.
Sorry to put you on the spot there.
where it physically was in here. But part of what we do also is we plot inert waste, and that can go to like a concrete, for example. It's not hazardous waste. That's under the final language.
So can we recharacterize it from inert to non-hazardous?
Well, inert is defined in statute, so you probably don't want to.
But finding number 9, this top, this kind of describes debris. I think that's what Todd was mentioning, was that debris is different than soil. And
There's enough flexibility in this waiver for us to be able to do that.
I mean, this is one of the areas that collaboration is really helpful with the discharger, with understanding what the
right. So it's Lori's correct by the definition of being debris, and soil is not debris. It's covered. Okay. And really the trigger is how is it, as Todd said, how does it test?
Right.
But I believe, Todd, if I'm correct, basically if you test and you find hazards, you dig a little deeper.
It's kind of how mechanically it works.
Well, I think this is a good start to making a little broader applicability, and if this meets with your motion and your second, then we will call for the question. Madam Clerk?
Okay. Eric Sandell?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Who seconded the motion?
I did.
Okay. Let's see. Don Jardine?
Yes.
Keith Dias?
Yes.
And Kimberly Cox?
Aye.
Carries.
Thank you very much. That was a wonderful discussion. Patrice, thank you for the thorough presentation.
And as a follow-up to the board, I will continue my dialogue with the other regions and with PowerCycle to explore some of those other policy areas about, you know, potentially, you know, a monofill at a rural landfill to help for future emergencies, and other things we could do with our regions about looking at, you know, county or city declared emergencies and how do we handle those.
Perhaps we'll see something in the future that increases it further. We'll move on to